I'm wrestling, do not weep for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's up, everybody? This is episode number 78 of the T. Rowan Funky Show, brought to you, as always, by Defense Soap, defend what you've built. And Dolomer Mats and Tommy, this is our Fargo episode. I just got back. I was drained for about 2 days from the ups and the downs and the highs and the lows. But I'm excited to talk about it.
And congratulations to you for getting some All-Americans. That's awesome.
Yeah, we got four All-Americans. When I looked at it, I thought eight was the best we could possibly do. And that would be, like, perfect from everybody, you know?
Right.
And some of those brackets are just so ridiculous that ending up with four, you know, now a few days later, I'm very happy with how the team wrestled. And it was, like I said, a lot of highs and lows, a lot of ups and downs, but overall very good. Hey, so we got some broad topics before we kind of get into the matches. So this is year 24 of it being in Fargo, North Dakota, and the bid is up. What do you think? It's going back to Fargo next year? Do you think it should go back to Fargo? What are your pros and cons?
Yeah, so in my opinion, and I said this on Twitter, and I haven't tweeted lately. I do a lot of retweets, but I haven't said anything lately on Twitter. But to me, Fargo, and I think this happened a little bit by accident. They just found a dome with a college campus, you know, in the Midwest, and it happened to be North Dakota State. They signed a contract, but and that was the intention 24 years ago. And I'm making a lot of presumptions here, Ben. But
sure.
To me, over the course of time, over the past 25 years, Fargo has become synonymous and intertwined with the American wrestling culture. Not only just calling it Fargo instead of the Junior Nationals or Cadet Nationals, but also I think the overall experience, the pilgrimage to the middle of nowhere.
I like that you call it a pilgrimage. I like that wording, Tommy.
To the middle of nowhere to settle a score, to decide who's the best in America and in the world's oldest sport. I just feel like there's a lot of nostalgia, if you will, associated with Fargo. And that's not to say that that wouldn't be the case in Louisville. I think I've heard that they're going to Louisville or whatever. But to me, I just feel like there would be a lot of sad people, myself being one of them, if the event was held anywhere other than Fargo. I know that there's some probably less than stellar things that go on with Fargo, accommodations, you know, the walk. You know, there's probably some logistics things that make it difficult, perhaps even the cost for some other states that have to fly. It's not as economical as it could be in other areas. So I know there's a lot of things to consider. But to me, Ben, and I don't know how you feel, we haven't spoken about this, but I would be really sad. I think Fargo is an incredible venue for the type of sport that wrestling is and the event that we hold every summer.
Well, so I agree with you on a handful of points there, actually. To your point, it is kind of a rite of passage, right? Everyone who's wrestled in America that who's been pretty good in the last 25 years has gone through Fargo, right? And we can talk about the same experiences. We know exactly what we're talking about, whether it's Sandy Stevens freaking yelling at you or it being 97 degrees and humid as you're walking around Fargo, right?
Right.
And everybody knows that. So it is definitely kind of a rite of passage. That being said, my only issue would be, and I, for Wisconsin, this is not an issue, right, is the travel. I mean, for a lot of these states, it is very expensive. So I could see it being a lot more reasonable. You know, not only because it's far away, one, right? So you're way on the top of the United States in the middle of nowhere, to your point. But the airport is small. I mean, I was considering flying either to or from. And it was $500 for a one-way ticket, Tommy. And that was a direct to Chicago. That wasn't like I had to make a connection and go somewhere else, right? That was direct to Chicago, $500 one way. So as far as people flying in, it, you know, man, it's expensive. So, I mean, that's the only
angle. I don't disagree with that. I think that, you know, I also think that perhaps you know, you got to think that after 24 consecutive years of running the event in Fargo, 4,500 participants, all these state chapters investing hundreds of thousands of dollars going to this event, you know, USA Wrestling and the state chapters probably have the process of going to Fargo pretty dialed in, where it would be, I would consider it a significant inconvenience starting out, not forever, but starting out to go to another location.
100%.
But, you know, if the juice is worth the squeeze, you got to do it. I just, from a wrestling fan perspective, and actually even as a competitor, just looking back on my life as a wrestler, that was some of the greatest memories that I have as a competitive athlete.
Agreed.
Is on those Fargo trips. And I think that if I went to Louisville and it was on, you know, it was in downtown Louisville at the Yum Center, or I don't even know what they're thinking, but I just don't know that
those 24 mats.
Right. You're right. So I'm just throwing stuff out there, but I just don't think that the experience for me personally would have been quite the same if it wasn't for, you know, the town of Fargo, North Dakota. So
they
got a lot to consider. I think it'll end up in Fargo again. But
I mean, to your one point, Tommy, about the state chapters and state organizations have to redo what they're and that's where I would say it can't be switching every 2 years, right? Because you know, the NCAA is with a team of 8 to 10 athletes. That ain't a huge deal, right? But I know Wisconsin, I think in freestyle there was 93 guys, right?
Right.
And that was just freestyle. Right. So, I mean, you know, if the state organization's in charge of getting that many kids in the right place at the right time and all the logistics, good God, that's going to be a headache if they're switching every couple of years. So I hope they lock
if they switch, I think it's quite a project. It's not going to be a 2-year deal. It's going to be like, all right, we're going to try this for 6 years or something.
Yes.
And see, because the first year, it's going to have its glitches no matter how prepared you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know that, you know, there's a lot of people that just don't understand the gravity of that. But if USA Wrestling does switch and the state chapters switch, you know, there's going to be some chinks
Good
in the
Lord.
Armor to be expected.
I run a tournament with 300 guys, and I can imagine the hassle with that. I run a team camp with 200 guys and the effing headaches I run into. I can't imagine a tournament with 4,800. I mean, good God.
No doubt.
No doubt. I guess if I had a vote, I'm voting, let's just leave it in Fargo. It's good. It is iconic.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to enjoy it. There's not a lot of issues. So let's leave it.
Right. Correct. I'm with you. That's my vote as well.
Okay. So let's hit on some more topics. And Tommy, I got one close to the heart. The Rudis Nike debacle. Let me just start, because obviously you're an invested party. And well, I like you guys, but I'm not exactly invested.
Yep. Right.
So to fill the fans in, Rudis had this brilliant idea of guerrilla marketing to throw up a tent across the street with a bunch of Rudis gear in it, because they did not win the bid, which Nike won, right? To which point, Nike threw a fit because they didn't see it coming, called the cops. Rudis had everything legal. They were allowed to stay. But then they put out this article between USA Wrestling and Nike saying it could hurt the bid to the city. But the article was almost laughable because in no way did it explain how it would hurt the bid, right?
Right.
And so, I thought it was hilarious, and I thought it was kind of a chicken move by Nike calling the cops. You know, because to get to the Rudis tent, you had to walk about 800 feet, and it, like you said, it's 96 degrees every single day in Fargo, North Dakota in July. So kids are making a sacrifice to go out of their way to go across the street because Rudis makes cool shit and Nike doesn't really make cool shit. but I kind of see it as a non-issue. If any vendor wants to set up across the street, who gives a shit? And if there's 100 vendors, that's probably only going to make the event cooler, right?
Right.
So me, I couldn't care less.
As usual, Ben, you had a very colorful opinion, and I've already spoken to you, you know, about it, so I'm not surprised by your opinion. And, you know, who knows? We don't know that it was Nike or USA Wrestling or some random fan that called the police. I mean, I can't assert who it was and why and how everything transpired, why it was a media event, so on and so forth. But all I know is I know what Rudis's intentions are, and our intentions, as always, and I know it's going to sound cliche, but we're trying to run a great business, and we love wrestling. And we have a dual purpose of running a great business that's for profit. It's not non-for-profit. It's for-profit. We want to build a great business, but we also want to do great things within wrestling. I mean, the shareholders, the owners in Rudis, the people that work for Rudis, you know, we are of wrestling. Wrestling's in our soul. So going to Fargo, yes, is it a guerrilla marketing tactic or ambush marketing, as they say it in the business world? I mean, I guess, yeah, but that wasn't the goal. The goal was to go be with our customers. That was the goal.
Yeah.
And if that means it's called ambush marketing or guerrilla marketing, then so be it. But our goal is to go be with our customers in and around, you know, some of the finest events that the sport has to offer. And that's why we went. I'll say that, you know, I'm aware of the USA Wrestling, you know, agreements and sponsorships. I mean, Rudis yearns to be partners with USA Wrestling. And I just feel like it's a matter of time, because I know Rudis is not going anywhere. Rudis is not going anywhere. Rudis is going to stay in wrestling forever. I mean, I can't say the same for our competitors, only because I'm not them. But, you know, we're not a global conglomerate that is, you know, maximizing business opportunities. We are of wrestling. We're a wrestling company. So I'm not going anywhere. We're not going anywhere. And we have a great relationship with USA Wrestling. At least I think we do. And I feel like we operated within the boundaries of their restrictions that they have with the agreement with North Dakota State University, the Fargo Sports Commission. And I feel like they're doing their job protecting their partners and Nike. I don't blame them for protecting them, but you know, you can't restrict trade. This is America. It's capitalism, and our business, we are going to compete. And I feel like we did everything above board and in bounds. And if I felt like we were out of bounds, then, you know, we wouldn't have done it. We consciously made the choice. And to your point, Ben, it was 97 degrees, really humid, 500 yards across the street from the dome, outdoors in a Burger King parking lot. So, you know.
And they could get that Whopper for free.
That's what we did. And, you know, we feel good about it. I mean, I feel like, you know, myself and my partners and everyone at Rudis, we're the type of people that we like to compete. We are business people, but you got to put your head on your pillow at night. And I feel great putting my head on my pillow at night, because
nice.
I feel like we did everything in bounds with our integrity intact. But, you know, I think perception can be a number of things, but the way I perceive the situation is that we did what we had to do and successful. And if the event's in Louisville next year, we'll find a way to be there too.
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of thinking, Tommy, it's pretty amazing to me that it's been 24 years and no one's thought of that idea before, to put a freaking tent up in the parking lot across the street. That was kind of interesting to me.
Well, you know, we made a significant investment, at least for small businessmen, in going there. And you know, now hindsight 2020, it worked out, right? But before you went, it's like, I'm going to spend all this money and I'm going to rent a tent and I'm going to sell t-shirts in a Burger King parking lot. I mean, Ben, before it happened, it could have been a bust, right?
Yeah, it's funny. It was funny when you put it that way.
That's what's fun about business. That's what's fun about competition. That's what's fun about entrepreneurship, is you take risks and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. And, you know, you've been on the losing end before. I've been on the losing end before. And we did it, you know, it worked out. But I think the reason people never did it is because it's a significant risk. I mean, there's no, I bet people might do it next year. Who knows?
Honestly, that would be a great thing. I mean, the more people there, the better.
Yeah.
Makes it a cooler event.
Yeah, no doubt.
Let's get moving then on to the next topic. Next topic is the weigh-ins. So they did these a little different. I think they did these because obviously UWW is now moving to a multiple day weigh-in.
Right.
So they did the weigh-in the day before, right? The event the day before,
right.
Day one. So we'll call it day minus one, and then they did it
right.
On day two. Plus 2 pounds. I kind of liked it because obviously I'm negative. I'm anti-cutting a lot of weight. And obviously we have kids cutting weight, but when you got to make weight a second time 2 days later, you can't be bouncing up 15 pounds, you know? So you're gonna take
no doubt
the most severe of the weight cutting. So I really liked that. I thought it was good. And I guess I'm almost –
it's healthy.
It's healthy, and I'm kind of glad the international system's going to a two-day weigh-in. I think that'll level the playing field there as well.
Right.
So,
but what's your, so you're just saying that you liked it.
I liked it. That's it. I liked it. I thought it was good.
I think I agree. And I mean, you're going to spend your life in wrestling. You're building your academy out. I got three boys that are going to wrestle. At least I think they're going to wrestle. And I'm glad that there's a healthy outlook to the whole weight cut deal. And I think it's a good thing. I think that, you know, I'm glad it worked out. You were down on the floor coaching guys. I'm glad they were able to sustain that over 3 days and nobody felt like it was kind of an unfair deal or kind of a goofed up deal.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we got our kids at the right weight class, but it was also, you know, informing them, hey, you do in fact have to make weight a couple of days later, so you're going to have to take that cut, you know, the weight seriously and get your weight down,
right,
and not be doing a lot of crash dieting at the last minute. So there was that part to it also, obviously.
Right, right.
Yeah, so that was good. All right, next topic for referees. So I thought this was funny, Tommy, because obviously this is the first time that freestyle has been first ever in 24 years, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought we got the refs, I thought they were fresher. I thought they did a great job. There's only one situation that made me insane, and it honestly, they all do it the exact same way, so they must be coached to do it. So I'm going to go ahead and throw it on the UWW again,
right?
As I love to do. But it's this passivity situation, Tommy. It is so absurdly ridiculous. So I will tell you what's so absurdly ridiculous about it is they – literally 100% of the time, and I said this to a couple refs, and they said, well, that's not how it should be. And I said, well, you're telling me that's not how it should be, but that's how it is. Literally 100% of the time where they call two passivities, right? So they call passive one. They always call both colors. They say passive red, passive blue, passive blue, passive red. Never, not one time was it passive red, right?
Right.
And I said, how is that even a possibility that 100% of the time, both men are being passive? I mean, there's lots of times when it's very clear to me that one man is being passive. The other man can't score because the other man is being passive. So why aren't we punishing him? And I got – and so obviously whenever this would happen, I'd get annoyed and I would stop and I'd yell at the ref and not yell at him, but I'd say, what the hell? I got so many different responses, Tommy. I mean, it was almost laughable. My favorite one of the week, and I'll probably be saying this for years – And I was busting the ref's ass the next couple days over it. He said, Ben, I did a study, and 84% of the time that I call someone for passivity, they score within the next 30 seconds. And I said, that is bullshit. There is no way you did that study. 84% is too exact of a number. You are totally full of crap. So I called him 84% the next 2 days.
Oh my gosh!
But
did
and
you
then
make many friends.
Oh my gosh! No, everyone was laughing about it. All the other refs thought it was hilarious that this guy said 84%. And
you know, I think that the goal, you know, truthfully, the goal of this passivity is to not award reality, but to create more action after you make the call.
Yeah.
So that's why they're not using objectivity, they're using subjectivity to get the match going, which is what's frustrating as an athlete.
And then, you know, and then, like, I mean, a couple times it would be like that, you know, boom one, boom the other, and I'd be like, my guy just shot seven times. And then they'll say, then this is my other favorite line, Tommy, that I heard a few times. I mean, I heard a lot of answers to this question, but they said, well, you don't understand, passivity is not being aggressive, passivity is not scoring.
Right.
I bet. Well, neither of them are freaking scoring. The score is 0-0. Neither of them scored.
It's tough.
You know, so
you
it's
know,
like...
one thing you said that I think is awesome. One, I thought it was cool they did freestyle the first time. I thought it was good, but I never really thought of this. But yeah, the officials, those guys go through a grind for seven days, and I'm sure on the back end of that, they're just a little bit more tired, a little more fatigued, a little bit sloppier.
Yeah.
As anybody would. I'm not even criticizing them.
No.
So it probably the freestyle got the benefit of a fresher set of eyes on their tournament.
100%.
That's cool.
So, yeah. So the passivity thing, and I'm taking that all. I'm not putting that in individual referees. I'm taking that to the top. It's shenanigans.
Right.
Like, if we're going to call someone for being passive, let's just call who's actually passive. Not, like, Tommy, that is just the same exact thing as saying, we're going to award 1 point to who's ever got lighter colored shoes on just so we get points on the board. I mean,
that's exactly right.
It's fabricating points.
Yep.
But we can't just fabricating points doesn't equal scoring. It equals fabrication. It's not real.
Here's the thing.
Fake news.
Here's reality. Here's the reality, though, Ben. Can you even blame the officials? And let me finish here. But we changed our rules so much from way up on high at the UWW and previously FILA, and our Olympic refs, who are the best of the best, the focus of the focus, they can't provide a consistent measurement of how to call a complete freestyle wrestling match. So you would think that as you trickle down to the high school level, I mean, it's like, they don't do it for a living. You know, I don't do this podcast for a living. And every now and again, we get people tweeting me saying I'm a schmucko because I'm not paying attention to the results. I mean, the refs are in the same position. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And so you want to hear my economic proposal to make the refereeing slightly better?
Yeah, let me hear.
Okay. So there's I got the number as approximately 150 referees in Fargo, North Dakota, right?
Right.
Yeah, the three-man mechanics to me is shenanigans because the three-man mechanics, there's really, if you really pay attention closely, there's really one guy that's in charge, you know, and he's kind of leading the dance, and the other two are following him, right?
Yeah, if you're really watching it closely, that is true.
That's kind of what's happening, right? So I would say that we do away with three-man mechanics because, again, I think it's a charade anyways, right? And if you go from, say, 6 or 24 mats, so you go from 60 to, say, 150 referees to 60 referees, right? And so then, obviously, that's 2.5 per mat. So they got a good rotation going, right, where they're not working every single match. Then, obviously, you can pay them maybe not 2.5 times more, but maybe you double their pay, right? So maybe it's actually a wage, or I would hope it's a wage, that someone could get interested in making, if that makes sense, right?
So right.
And then you grade the referees, and maybe every year the bottom 12 drop out, right? Give every state director, a ballot to grade the referees, and every single year the bottom 12 drop out. The bottom 12, and so other referees want to get into this 60 because A, it's prestigious, and B, maybe they're actually making a decent chunk of change because there's not so many of them. I mean. Right. That would make sense.
Plus the other thing that has nothing to do with anything other than it's just when you create a rank and file, it gets competitive and the competitive juices get flowing, which promotes, you know, growth. At least I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. So overall, I thought a pretty good job. The passivity thing was driving me insane, but that's a UWW issue. That's a directive down from the top. And then, you know, we could go away from the three-man mechanics thing. I just don't see it providing gigantic benefit. All other wrestling refereeing in the world is done by one person. So I don't see why freestyle could not be done the same.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
Okay, so let's get into the wrestling, Tommy. And honestly, we are not going to hit nearly everything.
No way.
We picked out like
– can't pull it off.
Yeah, we picked out like four brackets. Or five brackets that we really liked in the juniors. And we're going to kind of hit those, and then maybe we'll glance over some of the rest of the results. But I know myself, just on this junior 120 bracket, that's going to be the first one we're talking about. Number one, it's just totally ridiculously stacked, right?
Oh, yeah.
I know when I think I wrote down four matches that we both were going to watch last night, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I went in and started watching them, it was like, oh, shit, they wrestled? I'm going to watch that, too. Oh, wow, they wrestled?
No doubt.
I'm going to watch that, too.
Yep.
And, I think I had four written down for us to watch. I think I ended up watching nine matches or something in this one weight class. And so, to me, it's like, damn, I mean, this 120 is exciting. This 120 is like, I don't know if you remember, let's see, maybe it was 2001, 119 pounds. We had Bunch and Nick Simmons and Travis Lee.
That's been talked about many times. I don't remember it when it happened, but I've had a conversation about that bracket before.
And Joe Dubuque was in there. So, yeah, that bracket was just so ridiculous. I feel like this bracket could be like that bracket where we have three.
Well, the
or
fact
four
that,
I know,
yeah, we had an Ohio boy in that bracket. I think his first name is Dylan or Dom. I forget which. D'Amelio.
And Ohio boy, you had like six Ohio boys in this damn bracket.
Well, yeah, but he didn't place, and I know that he is very highly regarded in the state.
He's a cadet. He's a cadet world team member.
Yeah, no. I mean, but I'm just saying that, like, on the underground, not just on paper, but on the underground, people speak very highly of him. On being able to be successful at the next level as well.
Yeah. So.
And he didn't place.
Shoot. You know what? I should even go. I'm gonna give me 30 seconds or less. I'm gonna go to full rankings. And I just want to grab out the rankings so I can tell you, oh, damn it, Flo's got this ad where I got to wait freaking 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Why is Flo making us watch ads? Flo, I'm trying to see the rankings. Stop making me look at ads.
Because they got to make money, Ben. Okay. Don't hold it against them. You got to do it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, anyways, I want to detail exactly how many ranked wrestlers are at this weight class because it is freaking phenomenal. I mean, it really is phenomenal. Okay.
Let's do it.
What the hell? Now, Flo's interface is messing with me. I can't even go to 120. Oh, hell, Willie. What are you doing here? Maybe if I drop it down this. Oh, here we go. I got it. It was effing up. All right. Number one, Pat Glory was there. Number three, Antonio Menino was there. Number six, Joey Melendez. Number eight, Patrick McKee. Number nine, Tommy Hodgkins. Number 10, Michael Colaccio. Number 13, Dylan Emilio. Number 14, Gabe Tagg. And then
oh, gosh,
number 20. What?
I forgot about Tag from Ohio.
Yeah, and Tommy Hoskins. I mean, holy crap. Yeah, and then I think
How about Tag versus Glory? That was a first heck of a match. Round. What did you think of that cradle?
Did he get world? Yeah. Someone told me he executed it wrong, but that's fake news. He executed it correctly. He just needed to squeeze a little tighter, and he bailed as soon as he.
He didn't. When I watched it, he didn't hit it. He didn't hit it like you need to hit it. If you're gonna roll backwards across your back in a suicide cradle position, you gotta go. You gotta let it. It's like doing a cement mixer halfway. You just can't do it like that.
Well, no, you gotta go. I don't believe that's 100% true. Only because I've been there 7 billion times. But when he felt that little friction,
I've only been there like once, so I'll follow your lead.
So when he felt that little friction, I didn't have this match down for us to watch, but I went back and watched it because I was curious. So essentially, Glory gets his hand kind of through the leg in the crotch area, right?
Right.
Which will cause a little friction, but as soon as Tag felt that friction, he bailed on it instead of squeezing a little tighter and then really popping into a bridge to get it to go all the way through, because
yep.
When someone told me, hey, because I just did this move. I do moves on Technique Tuesday and Thursday on my Facebook page. And I literally just did this move last week. And I said, one of the things people don't do is they don't clear the leg. Because if you don't clear the leg, that gets you stuck on your back, you know? And someone said, hey, he didn't clear the leg. You just showed this on Facebook. And I said, wow, really? I can't believe. But he did clear the leg. But like I said, as soon as he felt that friction, he bailed when he should have, you know, squeezed and bridged and popped it through. And I think he would have still had it had he not bailed.
No, I think if Tag, when Tag, you know, you've bailed on things before.
I always tell people this, Tommy. The last time I got caught on a cradle was 1999.
Wow.
So it's been a while.
Well, what I'm saying is, though, you've been in positions where you either didn't do something because you didn't think it was there, or you bailed on something because you thought it was not there. Then you watch the video and you're like, man, I am a moron. I was wrong.
Sure.
And I feel like Tag at the time, he thought it was the right choice. Otherwise, he wouldn't have done it, obviously. When you watch that film, it's clear. It is very clear. And I'm not even a cradle guy. That all he had to do was put a little bit more pop in it, squeeze a little harder, arch it through, stick it out, and he would have had it.
Yes, 100%. I agree totally. So that's what I think he should have done. Maybe I think kind of if I try to get into his head, what he was probably thinking is, hey, if I roll over, I'll give up a one-point reversal instead of getting held on my back for two, right? Because, you know, if Glory stopped him on his back,
he was down 8-6, I think, when he went for it.
Correct.
So the other thing, and I think it was like a minute and a half ago, so the other thing with me is like, you know, I guess it's kind of like if you score here, you win. If you don't score here, you're not going to lose. But, you know, you don't have exactly a lot of time to make up for it. So I almost like, why'd you bail at that time? At that point in the match, it was like all or nothing at that point, at least I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I shouldn't have bailed. So the other first round match that ended up that was kind of a no-go early, but they ended up, you know, I look back, it's interesting, is Patrick McKee wins 14-13 over Xavier Rico, who I have no idea who that is. And he has to score the last, I believe he's the last 3 or 4 points of the match. I'm looking at it right now. He scored, okay, so he was down 11-7 and came back and won 14-13.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, I'm going to call Patrick McKee Mr. No Defense because this guy.
I think, yeah, he's
holy crap.
Well, even against Melendez, who he ended up pinning, but, you know, he's the type of guy that he puts a lot of pressure on, mm-hmm. but hasn't, and I'm saying this in the kindest way because he's a stud, he's a junior national champ, but he hasn't, you know, when you put pressure on, like he puts pressure on people, you've got to use your brain at the same time, you know? And I think it takes a while to have that type of heat and also be thinking clearly the entire time. And I think that he'll get that when he gets to college or even later in high school, but he puts on so much heat that I think he just doesn't realize he walks into some shots or maybe doesn't care.
And his go-to defense is a chest lock. Because someone's scoring, one way or the other, someone's scoring points
right.
on that. So
I mean, he's an animal. But I think it's a little bit reckless, which happens when you put that type of pressure on at a young age. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, and so, you know, he kind of went through the meat grinder because in the round of 16, he's got Joey Heilman. And then
yep.
in the quarters, he has Tommy Hoskins. So Heilman's ranked 20. Hoskins is ranked 9. I don't know how the hell this Ravon Foley kid isn't freaking ranked because he's a freaking animal. I ended up watching a couple of his matches because I was just really impressed by him. And then he has Melendez in the finals. I mean, so that's 4 really high-level kids right in a row. Boom, bam, pow. And
well, training at Pinnacle with Lawrence, you know, he's in a prime yep. training environment to be able to go through a meat grinder. So that showed, you know what I mean?
Hey, so did you see? Okay, wait. I want to say it first. I didn't tell you to watch this match, but Foley versus Glory. Glory was all actually up 10-2, and Ravon Foley headlocked him and pinned him. So it shows Ravon Foley was winning 10-6 at the time of the fall, but that's actually opposite. He was down 10-6, and he was down 10-2 prior to headlocking.
No, I didn't watch it.
Yeah, so that was it. So Glory's actually kind of kicking his butt. But this Foley kid's got – he's got good attacks, and he's got great what was Willie calling it? Blank. It's the correct pronunciation is proprioception. But what – Willie was talking about Ed Ruth having great proprioception, and he was calling it something else. God, what the hell was he calling it?
Oh,
I need to go back and listen. He was calling it something else, so I was trying to think of that word.
Oh, great.
So anyways, so Ravon Foley's got – he's got great proprioception. He's got great attacks. I was really impressed. I ended up watching like 3 of his matches. I could end up seeing – he's not in the rankings now, but I'd be surprised if he wasn't coming up here, and I could see him being really good.
Right.
So anyway, so he headlocks Pat Glory. So McKee versus Hoskins. Did you see this throw that Hoskins hit right at the beginning of the match?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Man, I never saw that before this weekend, and I probably saw it 3 or 4 times. It's freaking awesome. So
yeah,
I don't know if I can describe this to our listeners, but so obviously, if you stand up with a double leg with your head in the middle, one of the moves that happens is you grab a wrist and you throw backwards for 4 points, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, now everyone knows that's coming, right? So what happens
yep.
is the guy who's being lifted ends up pushing up on their back to almost make like a T, right? So they're doing like
mm-hmm.
a back extension. So the one guy's standing up, the other guy's pretty much flat across his back because he knows if he leans over, he's going to get thrown backwards, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they slide their arms down a little lower on the legs, and essentially they do like a half front flip, right? Which throws the guy who's on their shoulders then, boom, straight to their back. I mean, it was nice. Awesome.
I don't know if we could actually explain it in a way where people follow it, but it was nice.
Well, go back and watch it. You know, if you couldn't get what I was talking about, then you can go back and watch that. But again, this is, you know, and this is the story of the quarters and the semis for McKee is McKee puts pressure on, Hoskins attacks, and then McKee hits his chest wrap, you know, over and over and over again.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing about McKee is that even though he's a little reckless, I think that's why he gets a lot of points scored on him, how reckless does his opponents feel by the end of the match, because they've been operating at a pace that they just have never felt? I feel like that's McKee's kind of MO.
Yeah, yeah. So, that's a good way to put it. And that pressure, obviously he won the damn bracket, the toughest bracket in the tournament. I don't believe he did get outstanding wrestling. That went to David Carr, but for the depth of this bracket, he definitely could have got the OW. So McKee beats Melendez in the finals. In third place, I got to go through some of these results, because that time when I started looking at these results in the wrestle back, I'm like, damn, he didn't All-American, he beat him, what the? So Glory beats Colaccio.
Right.
Colaccio for third place. But in all-American, so these guys didn't even All-American, Tommy. Pat Glory texts Dylan D'Amelio, former Cadet World team member, 12-1 to not All-American. And Tommy Hoskins, Tech Falls, fellow Ohioan? How do you say that?
Ohioan.
Gabe Tag 10-0 to knock him out of the tournament. And Michael Colaccio, Tech Falls, beats Joey Heilman 9-2 to knock him out of the tournament. So Patrick Glory he got knocked out a little bit earlier from the headlock, but then he came back because he tech-falled D'Amelio, tech-falled Hoskins, tech-falled Riz Lovett, and tech-falled Michael Colaccio. So that's four tech-falls in a row if you're counting for Patrick Glory,
right.
Who is, rightfully, he's the number one guy in the country.
Right, right. Impressive bracket.
Seriously.
And then all the while, Tag is not placing in the junior nationals and committing to North Carolina in the same week.
Yeah, how did that work?
Just to show you how tough the bracket is.
Well, was he? Well, you think he was waiting to see if he did better, to see if he get any better offers? Then he got knocked down. He's like, "F it, I'm committing."
I don't have the first clue.
Well, me neither. So, all right. So, let's move on to 126. A very tough bracket. Not as tough as 120. My guy Aaron Shulis had a breakthrough here. I gotta give a shout out to him. All-American, sixth place.
Awesome.
But the crazy one here, in my opinion, and it was an awesome match, was the semi, and this is another Ohio. We've been talking a lot about Ohio boys, but they aren't as tough as Illinois boys, because Illinois is freaking so ridiculous at this tournament.
They're awesome. I mean, Ohio got second, which is great, but Illinois was far and away.
Yeah. So this Drew Matten versus Alex Thompson match, freaking fantastic match, back and forth. And, the weird part about this one was that protest took about 17 minutes. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. What's amazing to me, and I guess I'm tooting my Ohio horn here, but I was just impressed with Matten's composure to be down. I think he was down.
He was down by quite a bit. 10-4, maybe?
He was down by a lot, but then. He's down when the protest starts, when the questionable call starts. Then they sit around for 15 minutes, and then.
I think, Tommy, you're exaggerating slightly, but I think it was a 9-minute protest.
Yeah.
Because I kept skipping ahead, and I'm like, what? Are they still not started?
Well, when you do the math here, though, you're losing when a 9-minute break in the action stops. Then when the action starts again, you get scored on. So, mentally, it's a pretty defeating, 15-minute span. You're getting your butt kicked. They stop the match. They squabble over some calls. The match starts again. You get scored on. I mean, it's just the mojo, if it's ever not going to be there, that would be the time. And then he just stays incredibly composed. I mean, incredibly composed.
Yeah.
And just pushes on through. And then he hits that 4-point throw to, open the match up at the end there, which was phenomenal. But just the composure, I was more impressed with the composure than the wrestling.
Yeah.
At least on my end.
Hey, so this made me think of it, because there was a questionable couple out of bounds to me at the end of this match where, I thought Thompson should have got one more point before the last scenario. So it would have actually made it 12-12, but I believe that Matten still would have won on criteria.
Right.
Another thing that would make the refs' jobs easier, because, like I said, I want it to be where the refs don't have to make a lot of decisions, right? It's black and white.
Right.
Is the 1 point out of bounds for a grounded versus standing at wrestler. It's like if you just make it 1 point, if there's no takedown given, it makes, do you know how much easier that makes it? I mean, it makes it so much easier. I mean, I know I had one match, and this is not one of my athletes, but it's a Wisconsin kid who's really good who I was watching, but it was Mason Coffin versus Will Luan. And it was so bizarre because, not to go totally off topic, but Mason Coffin would get snapped down, and he was on both knees, and Will Luan would somehow, he would get in like a sled pushing stance, right? And he would push him on both knees straight out of bounds, kind of like what happened in Cox Taylor, right?
Right.
But
right,
it was it was interesting because the refs called the exact same, because the scenario happened over and over and over again, right? So first they called it nothing, grounded athlete, right? Second time, it's 1 point, push out. Third time, no points, grounded wrestler. Fourth time, 1 point. Fifth time, caution and two, right? And
right.
So it's like, well, that literally the exact same scenario, the exact same thing happened, and now it's been called three different ways. Like, what is the real call that should be happening right now, you know?
Yeah, and exactly.
I think there would be a lot of clarity there if it was just, hey, if there's no takedown given up, it's a point. Knees, whatever.
I like it.
That would make it so much easier. And that was so this the end of this Thompson-Matten match, there was a scenario where I thought it should have been 1 point Thompson, which would have made it 12-11, and he got another point after that, which would have made it 12-12. Like I said, I think Matten would have had the criteria still. But
the whole dynamic might have been different.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. So that's my thing. All right, so we're going to skip all the way up to 145 pounds. So let me go through this for our listeners also. This is, if 120 wasn't the toughest bracket, 120 might have more depth, but this bracket had, at 140.
Four or five animals.
It had animals. Number one, number three, number four, number five, number six at 145 on Flo's rankings, and number four and number nine from 152.
Right.
So at 145, the only guy you're missing out of the top six right now is Josiah Ryder. That's the only guy you're missing. So all the other top six are there. And then the other thing about this is that, you know, seniors, so Willie took all the guys who are going into college out of the rankings. So these are like the rankings for the class of 2018 and under, essentially.
Right.
So like a Caden DeFeller, who made the finals, is not on this list because he's already a senior and he's already going to Oklahoma State. Right?
Right.
So there's a few of those guys in this bracket also. I think you could definitely make an argument for this being the toughest bracket, and I think the best match in this bracket, is the Artelona Sasso semi. So, and for those who are paying attention to the rankings, Sasso is number one at 145, and Artelona is number four at 152. So two very, very highly ranked wrestlers, and you know,
it was an insane match.
It was, wasn't it?
It was awesome.
What do you call the? So we call it the Ukrainian, where so Sasso is in the quad pod in the second period, and Artelona goes head inside, grabs both knees, and kind of does like a gut wrench technique. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and pops him over
I know
four.
I mean, I know the skill you're talking about. I've never heard a name for it, but it was nasty. It was like Olympic level, like wow, awesome stuff. You know what I mean?
So we call it the Ukrainian, Tom, if you want to steal that name from us.
I like it. I'll call it the Ukrainian.
Because who was it? Ibrahim Aldatov was very good at it, so I think that's where my coach picked it up at.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Lincoln McIlravey used to do like a hip toss from a standing leg lace position that it's not it's kind of the same type
like
of
a cartwheel
motion,
right?
Yeah, it was cool. It's a different move, but if I'm getting to be like a wrestling nerd here. It's like a completely different move, but comes from the same family. Like it's the same type of, you know, taking that tripod position and lifting it and leveraging his hips for your benefit. You know what I mean?
So, yeah. And I think Tommy, most people who do listen to our show are in fact wrestling nerds. So I think it's okay for us to talk kind of in depth about these topics because I don't think there's any general public who listens to our show.
That's a good point.
Okay, so Artelona Sasso, awesome match. You guys got to watch that. You know, Sasso, the one thing And I don't know. Maybe I'll just give him a message on our show if he listens, or if his dad listens, or someone who's
and let me say what? Yeah, I got a message for him too.
You got a message?
I wonder if it's the same message.
Well, he's and I think maybe we're drawn together as kindred spirits because he also has curly hair and likes to scramble or something. But I don't know what it is. He doesn't come into these tournaments as in shape as he could. And obviously, like, you know, one of my guys wrestled him. They wrestled him at the Flow National Semis, and he totally gassed against them. You know, and he got to the point where my guy Peyton Mako came back and got three takedowns on him in the third period. But it's like Sammy is so incredibly talented, and obviously he's had to put a lot of time into it to get the skills that he has, right? So he's put a lot of effort, but I don't know if it's lifestyle choices, I don't know if it's training choices, but
that's interesting.
Viewpoint. So Sammy, I'm gonna tell you this: you got one shot at this shit. You got one time to go through life, and you are incredibly skilled, and you put a lot of work into it. Don't let distractions keep you from being as good as you can be. That's what I'm gonna say.
That's an interesting point. I think you know a little bit more. I know that you know a lot more about Sasso off the mat than I just watch him wrestle a few times, and I had a different viewpoint in that I think that Sasso's pace is we were complimenting McKee for his pace.
Yeah.
I think out of all the junior national matches I watched, he has the highest pace. To me, at least, I thought that he was insanely aggressive in the hand fight. He was looking for scores. You can tell when someone level fakes if they mean it or not.
Yeah.
He meant it. He was looking for scores. And I thought he shot himself out of the match a little bit. And maybe, you know, to me it's like, you know, yeah, maybe he needs to train harder because that could be what it is. Maybe he doesn't train as hard as he should or whatever. But there was a little bit where I was like, you know, you shot yourself out of the match a little bit.
Yeah.
I thought that
he
had the juice. He had a better pace. He contributed more to that wrestling match in the first 4 to 4.5 minutes than Arlona did, in my opinion.
Yeah, and so I 100% see what you're saying, right? But to the same point, if you're gonna commit yourself to that type of pace, right?
Then you've got to
wrestle it. You can't wear yourself out. You got to train for that pace. And it's like, so if we go Super 32. Who do you? He lost to Nick Lee at and obviously Nick Lee's high level, right? So Nick Lee, you know, you could tell Nick Lee wasn't better. You know, Sam, like I said, he wrestled hard, but Nick Lee was in better shape. Peyton Mako in the semis of Flow. Sammy wrestles hard. He comes out, you know, with a head of steam, but again, kind of got tired in the match. And then this match also, you know, he had 40 seconds to score at the end there, and you could tell that there just wasn't anything left. It was over.
It wasn't like he broke. He just didn't have the pop. He didn't have the juice.
Yeah.
But that four pointer by Artilona, the Ukrainian, as you call it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't fault Sasso for that one. That was just beautiful. That was awesome.
Correct.
That was great.
Yeah.
To me, that's what won the match. That won the match for him, even though it wasn't the points that won the match, but that won the match.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you at all. So, okay, let's go on. You know, we're kind of getting long here, Tommy, and we've only talked about five brackets to this point. So, we're going to talk about five, hopefully.
We could do another episode, but
we could easily do another episode.
There's two things I want to talk about before we close out. One is, you know how we were talking about David Carr or the top recruits that are uncommitted and stuff like that? I would say, given David Carr's performance, who he beat, how he beat him, his pedigree, his family, all that stuff. I mean, I would say that I'm willing to say that David Carr, after watching his performance and seeing a couple of his matches, I think he might be the number two recruit overall behind Stevenson this year.
Wow. Okay, so you're skipping ahead. Damn it, Tommy.
We got to do
152, and we're going to 160 next. So let's hit 152 real fast. I love this bracket, another really tough one. Will Lawan has been on a roll. He won both styles UW Cadets. He comes in here. He beats Peyton Robb, who he beat in the UWW Cadet Finals. And the semis again, he beats Jared Franek in the finals. And Lawan is just like, he's simple. He's a grinder. He's strong. He's tough. He must just be extremely powerful, just judging how he wins certain positions. But I'm very impressed with him. I don't think he's committed to going anywhere yet. I'm interested to see how he turns out in college because it's like, is he as strong as a college guy right now? Is he going to get much stronger? His technique is pretty simple, but obviously that's worked for a lot of people, right? I know Andrew Howe was coaching him, but that's an easy comparison right there, him and Andrew Howe. And obviously Andrew Howe was highly successful, so I guess I'm curious to see how he does in college. All right, so let's skip to 160 because you were already so excited about it.
My bad, man. My
All
bad.
right, so your boy David Carr, go.
Stud, man. I mean, it's not like we didn't know he was a stud. We knew that,
We
but
knew that.
it's just when you look at, like, okay, we're talking about Nate Carr's son, three-time Ohio champ. He's made world teams and what have you at his age group. Goes through Fargo, beat Lee in the semis.
So,
You
Tommy,
know.
let me just update you. I just looked. He is not currently in the top 14 pound for pound.
Yeah, I know that. He was like 14 or 15, right?
No, he's not in there. It stops at 14, and he's not in there.
I think I think he might not deserve number two overall, like in terms of what he's done, but I think when the dust settles, the only guy that's going to have a better career out of this class in college that I would bet on is Stevenson.
Okay, so let me give you my, and I don't know David Carr at all. I mean, I know of him. I've watched him wrestle. Here's my take, Tommy. And it's really funny because I actually did a Mental Monday. My Mental Monday was from Fargo. I did something, and it was about loving the fight, right? Like love it. I'll give you an example of a time because I don't really get to fight people too much anymore, you know? And so what I mean by that is, when you go at someone with an equal skill level as you in that specific thing, right? It's a fight. And so, like, I don't get to wrestle people that are my skill level very often, right? So it's like as a high school kid, I kind of
I'm with you.
go light on. So I remember one time at Nationals.
I got goosebumps. I got goosebumps listening to you because I know where you're going. I love it.
Nice. So one time at NCAAs is way post grad, but Chris Perry said, "Hey, you want to work out, right?" And it was like we warmed up for 5 minutes and then we just fought. Like, I didn't have to take it easy on him. He didn't have to take it easy on me. He didn't feel bad if he scored on me 5 times in a row. I didn't feel bad on him if I scored 5 times in a row. And we just got to fight, you know? And it was like,
Yep.
that was so much fun. And, like, me truly, like, I enjoy the fight, you know? And
Yep.
so I was talking to a couple of our athletes whose performances don't match their skill levels, and this AWA guys. And it's just like, to me, it's so apparent they don't love to fight, you know? And maybe that's something
Yep.
you got to work yourself
And
into.
you're not, it's like, I think it's important for our listeners. You're not talking about like being like it's loving the fight mentally.
Yes,
Not,
mentally.
you know, it's not like you want to inflict pain. That might be
Well, I
part of
might
it.
inflict pain to score some points or something.
Right, but it's you're not excited about inflicting. You're excited about the mental, the fight. The fight with the
Yeah.
guy in the mental,
Yeah, if it's a
emotional, eye
steamroll.
level, eye to eye,
Yes.
me and you, let's go.
Yes.
And that
And let's see, it pretty much lets you use
that's true.
tougher, right? Because
That's true in business. That's true in sports. That's true in business. That's true in so many aspects of life. You've got to like it. You've got to like competing with someone that is eye level with you. You've got to be like, no, oh wow, you might actually beat me. I might actually beat you. This is fun.
It's
Let's
fun.
go.
Yes,
And you've got to have that
exactly.
in you.
And it's a lot of things, and because it's like, okay, your skill levels are pretty even, your strength's pretty even. So number one, you got to try to find chinks in their armor, right? Because you never wrestled them before. So where are the chinks in your armor? Where can I exploit you, right? And then it's cool because if they're good enough, they're going to make some adjustments to where you're exploiting them, right? Like, oh, you got me there once, you ain't getting that shit again. And then number two, it's like, who's tougher? Can I wear you out? Am I going to wear you out? Because I'm going to try to wear you out, and hopefully I do wear you out, and then it's not a fair fight anymore. But so you got to, and you know who I brought up? I brought Jordan Burroughs up because a lot of people like crediting too much of Jordan Burroughs' success to his athleticism and to his double leg, which obviously he doesn't even score with anymore. But I said this simple thing. I hope I get it right because I don't have it in front of me. But I said there's three things Jordan Burroughs never does, right? He never gets shook up mentally. He never gets out of the match where he's pissed or does something. You know what I'm saying? Number
Oh,
two,
yeah, I love you.
he never makes mistakes. I mean, when's the last time you've seen Jordan Burroughs do something freaking stupid and put on his back? I want to say almost never, maybe never, right? And then number three, he never comes out of position, right? And that's something when people are in a fight, a lot of times when one guy's not as tough, he starts losing his position because he's not tough enough to hold it, right? And so I said, if you don't lose your composure, if you don't do something stupid and you don't come out of position, how many matches are you going to lose? And the answer, right, if you're good, is not very many.
Right.
So, David Carr, he's got the skills. He's got the proprioception. God, I can't remember what Willie said. He's got the flexibility. He's got all the tools. He's got the right body style, right? Which means
he's got the right people around him that care about him and know the sport.
Seems to be a great kid. If this kid loves to fight, if he wants to get in there and scrap, like you're saying, sky's the limit, 100%, right?
But you question whether or not he loves.
Well, I just don't know, right? Because here's the thing: is like even in the national finals, Tommy, even in the national finals, and I would say the semis was a fight, and you know, and I liked how he reacted to that situation. But even in the finals, he was so much better than Tyler Dow, right? And that's not a knock on Tyler Dow, because Tyler Dow is a very tough Wisconsin kid, but he was so much better. And then if you take that back, I mean, he's in Ohio, so maybe he's got to fight a few times. How many times a year does he really got to fight somebody?
Well, I think the thing that you're saying about David Carr, I in fact agree with mostly, is that, you know, because he lost to Jaden Maddox, who's very good and going to go to Ohio State, but he kind of got punked because he wasn't ready to fight. He went down to Delaware Hayes, some local yokel tournament. Jaden Maddox lives 20 miles away from that high school. Everybody in the area wanted Jaden Maddox to win. And he kind of got ambushed.
Okay, so we'll see. This is what I'm talking about right here.
And he kind of got ambushed because he didn't realize that he was in a fight. And then in the state finals, the way that he beat Jaden Maddox, which was a close match, but David Carr showed that he was better, at least for the time being, he realized and he was cognizant of the fact that he had to fight, and he liked it, and he enjoyed it, and he relished it.
Oh, so now does he like the fight or does he not like the fight?
No, so my thing is that David Carr doesn't have, and I've only watched him, Ben, 10 times, so I'm really just shooting from the hip here, but I don't think he really understands. He's not cognizant of when he's in a fight sometimes.
Oh,
and he needs,
that's
he really needs to feel like he's in one, and then you'll get the real David Carr. You know, sometimes wrestlers look a little bit bored or lackadaisic, and it's not, you know, they don't feel challenged. And some guys, all they need is a little bit of that feeling, and they're all in emotionally and physically and everything in between. They're all in. And I feel like David Carr needs to feel like he's really pressed before you see the real David Carr. And I say that as a criticism, even though I do think he's number two behind Stevenson. I say that as a criticism because you get to a certain level, collegiate, international, where it's like, dude, every single guy you slap hands with,
you're gonna
can
fight.
Beat you.
Yes.
Yeah. Every single guy you slap hands with can beat you. So you need to train your mind and your body to be that way every day, all the time. So you're almost like playing with fire when you don't conduct yourself that way as a dominant high school kid. And so
yes.
I think I know what you mean,
but
I do think he likes to fight. I do think he likes it.
Well, good.
I
if think he likes to fight, feels, he's going to be great.
Right. Okay, so we're kind of saying the same thing, but there's a difference to what we're saying, too. So I'm with you.
Okay, so I really I think that was a good show. We only hit 5 weight classes, Tommy. I think we got to circle back early next week and maybe hit the rest.
Let's hit the cadets, man. We didn't even touch the cadets. You got Braxton Amos, who I want to talk about as an upperweight. He's an animal. So let's hit the cadets next episode or something.
All right,
maybe
we'll do the cadets next episode.
All right, brother.
All right, you have a good day, Tommy. We'll see you guys later.
Yep. Thanks.
You are listening to the T-Row and Funky Show, brought to you by Defend Soap. Defend what you have built.